Don't waste time on emotions that don't do you any good.
Do I call you Lady Justice?
You can just call me Justice. Well, you tell me what a sandwich is, and then I'll tell you if a hot dog is a sandwich. When will there be enough women on the court? And my answer is, when there are nine. The two people love each other, and both are women or both are men. Why should the law put up a no sign?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 442. Gobble, gobble, gobble. How's it going, Andrew?
It's going fantastic, Thomas. How are you?
Oh, great. Recording a little earlier than normal because of the holiday.
Yeah, you know.
Maybe this will go out early to patrons. Everybody. We like to try to give everything. And this has always been our philosophy about holidays. Holidays, when you, well, hopefully you're not going and traveling and seeing anyone that you're not in a bubble with already.
Don't do that. Yeah.
But our philosophy on the show for the past 4 or 5 years, whatever it's been, is holidays are a time when you need your liberal podcast content the most. So we don't give you any old, you know, repeats or anything. We still do the episodes because I know that's what I want from my podcasts. I hate when they go off for the holidays and I'm like, I need this right now. So that's why we always come at you with new episodes.
I'm really, really proud. We have done 442 episodes, and we have not missed an episode, right?
Like, I think that's
you've
true.
You've been sick. I've been sick. We've had vacations. Like, we've had holiday. Like, you know, nor wind, nor sleet, nor rain, nor whatever. Yeah, we.
Nor sleet is in there, I think.
I don't know. Is that in there? It could be.
Might be sleet, nor snow. I don't know. One or the other. I think sleet's worse than snow, actually.
It is.
It's tricky when it's kind of mixed.
Sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Pretty, it's total sleep. All right. We've got so much to talk about. One more plug for our Cognitive Dissonance live stream appearance. That is this Friday. That is 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Be there, be square. We need to raise those funds for the Georgia races. It's vitally important. And also, we want to raise the most money. But, you know. More because of the Senate.
Let's not downplay that second part. Like, us raising more money than our brothers in podcasting is really, really important, right? Like, I mean, Puzzle and a Thunderstorm has four different shows that they're pulling from. Like, we just have you. So, so show up. One Pacific, 4 Eastern, Black Friday. You should not be leaving your house on Black Friday. You should be sitting there watching amazing content, which is it's going to be a ton of fun. We're going to be raising money to save Western civilization, which is, you know, a little better than getting a George Foreman grill. And you should still get that thing online. So there you go.
All right. Well, due to intense lobbying from one of the members of this show, we are finally going to talk about Lindsey Graham. And I have been wanting Andrew to do this episode for, I don't know,
a week and a half.
So glad that my pressure, you know, lobbying does work. The moneyed interests. No, this is not a moneyed interest. This is just good old fashioned lobby. This is the right kind of lobbying. I have an issue that's very important to me, which is Lindsey Graham is a criminal. And I got my lawyer friend, Andrew Torres, to do a breakdown. So finally, we get to hear about that. We also get, Andrew, is this right? I'm looking at this whiteboard. Even more, Andrew was right?
Yeah, I was right about pretty much everything. So you should calm down. It's all going to be fine. I've been right since the election. You should be good with that. Do we want to talk about, right? It's not on the whiteboard.
Yeah. Breaking 10 news.
Minutes. Yeah. 10 minutes before we record, Donald Trump, because this is how he runs the free world, right? Donald Trump, via tweet, pardoned Michael Flynn.
Did he really do it via tweet?
Yeah.
Is that official? How does that work? So someone else... Oh, he announced it via tweet, but it's some, right. I assume someone's doing the paperwork.
Yeah, there will be paperwork because the paperwork has to define what is happening. But the tweet is, you know, Michael Flynn has a full pardon. And you know, like, this is not like the last time I saw so-and-so gets a full pardon was when Thomas and I did The Running Man for Laud Awful Movies, right? That was one of the prizes that you could win when you won the in universe, but not shown on screen game show called Climbing for Dollars. I still love that movie. If you're not a Laud Awful Movies subscriber, like I did, I don't know. Yeah, you're missing out on Thomas and I having an awful lot of fun. Anyway, yeah. So 12 minutes ago, Donald J. Trump via Twitter writes, "It is my great honor to announce that General Michael T. Flynn has been granted a full pardon." And full pardon is in caps, right? Mm. Like that's like it's a thing.
Well, it wouldn't have been official if he didn't capitalize.
Congratulations to @GeneralFlynn and his wonderful family. I know you will now have a truly fantastic Thanksgiving. So literally everything about that is wrong.
He's going to have a bad Thanksgiving? Good.
Yeah, God, I wish. No, not wrong in that way. Wrong in a different way.
Oh.
Michael Flynn is released on his own recognizance pending a motion under Rule 48A to dismiss his case. So he's not in prison. He's not detained in any way. He's been at home with his family for 3 years. So when you start thinking about, like, how does our country handle dangerous criminals? They let them hang out at home and have the holidays. That is the kind of dangerous criminal that wanders the country chanting, "Lock her up," when the Democratic candidate has arguably committed an inadvertent crime. But, you know, when it comes to selling your own country out to Turkey, you get to hang out with your friends and family.
I also like the congratulations. Congratulations, you've won. got away with crime.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't know what the congratulations is.
We went through, so we're not going to do this in this segment. This is the second plug for Laud Awful Movies. And by the way, Laud Awful Movies is our bonus to patrons at the $2 level and up. Every month, we take a movie that involves legal questions and we break it down and we have a lot of fun. We swear. It's great. It's the best part of the show. Like there's no doubt.
I love it. And this recent one was almost a double header. There's a lot of content in there. There were notes, there were links.
It was the 90-minute quote movie ? Called The Plot Against the President. And Michael Flynn is the second most discussed person.
Yeah.
After
if you,
Devin
so
Nunes.
If you want to know why this pardon is happening, I think that movie does.
I think that's right. I think that's right.
Reveal a lot. But I think everybody wants to know, Andrew, what's the future here? There's no hope for any other state level crimes, right? This is the end. He gets away with it. Right?
Yeah. No. Michael Flynn's crimes are federal crimes. They are FARA, the Foreign Agent Registration Act. With respect to, you know, lobbying for an authoritarian regime before the U.S. government without disclosing that you were being paid by a ruthless authoritarian who is hostile to the United States. And if you don't think that's a serious thing, then you're not listening. Then you're not a show listener, right? Like, that's a serious crime. Michael Flynn was not indicted for FARA violations. He was not indicted in connection with the Bijan Kian case. And those were all pending indictments for which, you know, a non-Bill Barr Department of Justice might have investigated and handed down indictments in 2021. Mm. I imagine we have not seen the documentation. I would be stunned. And in fact, we'll put out a correction on this feed if it's anything other than, right, when Donald Trump says full pardon, that pardon is going to say for any and all crimes in existence as of the signature, my signature on this document. Yeah.
How is that even allowed? That sucks. It's a broad power.
I want to say this as plainly as possible, right? My son is 18 years old. There are people listening to the show right now for whom, like, Obama's second term is kind of hazy. Like, all of their political life is the Trump administration. And I want to tell you this. It did not used to be this way for anyone, right? When on his very last day in office, Bill Clinton pardoned a number of political cronies and personal friends, that was a massive scandal. And that scandal, and I have to tell you, I think Clinton would not have done that if Al Gore had won the 2000 election. Mm. I mean, Al Gore did win, but yeah. If Al Gore had been certified as the winner of the 2000 presidential election, I think Bill Clinton would not have done that because that would have so hamstrung the first year of the Gore presidency, because everything Al Gore would have tried to do would have been met with Republicans saying, yeah, but you Democrats don't care about the norms of good government. All you care about is exercising power on behalf of your friends and cronies. And that is, you know, pardoning three people who are friends of yours. And again, I do not defend that in any way whatsoever. That has been the entire
screw Bill Clinton.
Yeah, no, we're all team screw Bill Clinton, right?
I hope so. Yeah. I don't know.
So let's be clear on this. What Donald Trump has done is marginalize the office of the pardon attorney, right? Which is an office within the Department of Justice. It's one that Donald Trump has not even tried to like staff with his sycophants because he just ignores it, right? Like that's the ordinary process. And when you look at the pardons and commutations that Barack Obama did, those were nonviolent drug offender. Barack Obama commuted over 1,000 sentences. We've talked about this in a previous episode of the show. And that was in recognition of the fact that the standards have changed, right? And so people who were previously convicted on minor drug possession charges were subject to really unconscionably long mandatory minimum sentences. And Obama did something about that, and good for him. The pardon power was never intended, has never historically been used. And when I say has never historically been used, let's be clear about this. We did an early episode of Opening Arguments on whether Donald Trump could pardon himself. I take the view, and you'll be able to look at it in the show notes, that Donald Trump can pardon himself.
Yeah.
My view on that is based on the historic evolution and definition of the pardon power, which extends from the right of the sovereign, right, from the King of England. Okay? That's where we figure this stuff out from. And I want to tell you, in the history of Western civilization, right, when you had, you know, King Beauregard III or whatever, like,
I don't think that was a king. Yeah, that's okay. I don't know kings either.
Who was never a king.
It's probably an Edward or a George or...
It is. And I didn't. Yeah. I did not want to slander the good name of, you know, King Edward the 17th or whatever. You do not have corrupt English monarchs from the 15th century using the pardon power exclusively to benefit their friends and cronies, right? Like, this was a thing that, like, rulers took seriously back before we had elective democracy. And it's a thing that Donald Trump does not take seriously. So, yeah, it's bad. In no way does this diminish
amicus brief?
The work that we did. Absolutely. Yeah. Because we do not have, look, it would have been better if we had gotten a ruling, I mean, knowing this result, it would have been better if we had gotten a ruling from Judge Sullivan on the Rule 48A issue. So here's how this is going to interact. Within the next couple of days, by the time you listen to this show, Sidney Powell, and who knows, maybe she won't now, but I guess Michael Flynn is probably still paying Sidney Powell. Donald Trump is not any longer. She's been fired from his legal team, but Sidney Powell.
Too stupid or slash bad of a lawyer to be on Donald Trump's legal team. Yep. That's the ultimate insult. I mean, wow.
Sidney Powell is going to move to dismiss the pending indictment against Michael Flynn in front of Judge Sullivan on the grounds that the case is moot. And the case is moot. It will be dismissed.
I got to ask, though, I'm seeing rumblings on Twitter. I'm seeing, you know, is there anything to be done? I mean, I imagine that this is the typical Occupy Democrats kind of thing. But I see people that are like, well, it's a corrupt pardon. You can't corrupt a co-conspirator or something. You know, is there any magical tricks here? Or is this just we can't do anything?
I have exhaustively researched not just the history of presidential pardons, but gubernatorial pardons, mayoral pardons, right? Like, this is something that I have lived in. I certainly will listen to an argument from liberal lawyers, right? Like, we had Jed Sugarman on the show, who believes that the president does not have the power to pardon himself. And you might recall when he said that as kind of an aside, I was like, well, Jed, like, you should come back on the show. We should do a debate because not sure you're right on that one. Right. So I want to say it this way. If you find a credible source, right, a Jed Sugarman, a Lawrence Tribe, a Lawrence Lessig, a Richard Painter, right? If you find somebody who argues that there is a judicial basis for overturning a corrupt or co-conspiratorial pardon, I don't want to say that that person is an idiot, right?
Right.
I want to say I think their argument will likely not carry the day. I sure hope it does, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll evaluate it, you know, and I'll take a look at whatever argument they want to put together. It gives me no joy to be on the side of this pardon is going to stand. My evaluation from somebody who's done an awful lot of work in this area is that this pardon is going to stand.
Wow. Is Judge Sullivan freed up to do anything, or is it just like,
nope,
done?
Nope, that's it. That's done. And look, Judge Sullivan has a lot of high profile cases in front of him right now. And I feel confident this is one of these. I'm not even going to do a victory lap on it. Andrew was right. That Sidney Powell is going to move to dismiss the case. And Judge Sullivan will say, in light of pardon X, right, issued November 25th, 2020, this case is dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
It will be a one line. And here, but I want to be really, really clear about this. Here is the victory. If a future president has a corrupt attorney general and is pressuring his line prosecutors to dismiss cases against politically connected defendants, we do not have like that. We will have the exact same arguments that we have now. We do not have a ruling to the contrary, which let's be clear about this. We had for a hot second, right? That three judge panel at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, right? Led by Naomi Rao, we had that for a hot second, and we got active and we intervened and we got involved, and we don't have that as precedent. It will be a live argument that you can't corrupt the DOJ from the inside if any president tries to do this again. Now, is that a whole – right? Like you heard the way I couch that, right? Like that's not the same as having a trial court that says – you can't do this, right? Like, that would have been a much better outcome. We've been deprived of that outcome, but we've also been deprived of the worst case outcome. So I'm still
well, this still sucks, and we have not even started the whiteboard, Andrew. We have not even started the whiteboard, but that's what happens when Trump pardons his cronies 10 seconds
on
before
Thanksgiving. Yeah,
yeah, on Thanksgiving Eve. Okay, well, let's get to our show.
Andrew Torres
is correct. The best kind of correct.
Andrew Torres.
You were right. Tell your sister. You were right.
I've got some cool Andrew Was Right music, by the way, that I made just for fun. Andrew doesn't ever hear these things because I do them in post. But just so you know, Andrew, you have a fun little theme now. What else were you right about?
I was right about everything. And again, this is why you should, you know, chill out. We've called in the wolf. It's all going to be good. So, things that I was right about. First, Donald Trump's lawsuits. Do you remember those from like a week ago when people were saying, the lawsuits are going to like gum up the works and they're going to go to the Supreme Court. And look, and here's what happened. Exactly what I told you would happen. These lawsuits are nonsense. They've been roundly dismissed from every court in the country, be they conservative, liberal, moderate. Well, it doesn't matter. Donald Trump moved for injunctive relief in the Third Circuit, which, by the way, is not a thing you can do, right? Like, literally asking the Third Circuit to impose a TRO is the equivalent of, like,
ordering a Big Mac at Wendy's.
Yeah, exactly. That's a better analogy than I had queued up. So we're going to stick with that one. it's crazy, right? It is the kind of thing that, again, a court ought to impose Rule 11 sanctions against the lawyers that have signed these pleadings. Trump's lawyers have moved to admit Rudy Giuliani pro hoc vice in the Third Circuit to argue the case. And the Third Circuit doesn't let you do that, right? That's literally a thing. It's in the Third Circuit rules that says you cannot be admitted pro hoc to argue. Like, you have to be admitted to practice before the Third Circuit. It's crazy. So when we say we have...
It's just inept, right? I mean, sheer ineptitude.
Inept on a level. There's a lawsuit pending in Georgia in which... In the footnotes, in describing the ostensible evidence, of which there is no evidence, they copied over a footnote from their Michigan lawsuit, right? Because, you know, fraud in Michigan is not relevant to whether there's fraud in Georgia. But delightfully, the lawyer filling that out, I have a slight sympathy here because some of our listeners will confuse the state abbreviations for Michigan and Minnesota. They're like, AMI, right? So it is a Georgia lawsuit. It repeats an allegation about Michigan, but is in fact about Minnesota. That's real bad when you do that. you've heard about hearsay within hearsay. This is stupidity within stupidity. It's pretty great. And we didn't even get to cover, we flagged it in kind of the A segment. But Donald Trump fired Sidney Powell via Twitter. So I was right on all the lawsuits. I was also right. Boy, I feel like there aren't enough victory laps to do for this one. I told you that Emily Murphy would ascertain that Joe Biden is the president-elect. And on Monday, right before our episode dropped, she did, right? Because he is the president-elect.
So what was the reasoning that, or how did you know she would do that and not just hold out, you know, as an awful Trump hack? I don't remember.
Because we were hitting the point, and here's how it broke down as a legal matter. The statutes and accompanying regulations that we read gave Murphy some discretion, right, in order to ascertain whether Biden was president-elect. As a result of that, you could not simply bring a mandamus action, right? Mandamus is what you bring when a government official.
Hey, I remember that. If there's discretion, can't mandamus it.
Right. So, in other words, this was not a slam dunk 100-0. But what we knew was happening. So that the fact that it's not 100-0 does not mean that the Biden team was without a remedy, right? The remedy they had was a declaratory judgment action and an injunctive relief, right? And so what you do is you file a lawsuit that says, under the law, Joe Biden is president-elect, and so we want a court order telling Emily Murphy that under the operative standards, he's the president-elect, knock it off. And this is about the week, right? And again, I was just using my knowledge of the law and calendars and everything. Like, this is the week in which you bring that kind of lawsuit, right?
Yeah, Andrew has studied calendars a lot. There's a calendar unit in his law degree.
You really do. Like, and so, you know, you let him go the first 2 weeks, but then you back channel and you call up Emily and say, hey, not sure where you are. You can be wherever you want to be, but if you have not ascertained that Joe Biden is the president, you know, by X day, we're going to file a lawsuit.
We're going to ascertain you right into an orange jumpsuit. Well, not really, but.
Well, not quite. But yeah, we're going to get the court to force you to do that. And that's going to look bad and like not be great on your resume. And, you know, you're going down in a sinking ship for somebody who will not be in office, you know, 2 months from now. And that 100% happened exactly the way we told you.
By the way, I already hope this is a stain on her resume. I hope she doesn't get another job. Yeah. You already failed. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, should we talk about the letter that she sent to Joe Biden?
I don't know if you have time, man. I'm looking at your bullet points. You got a lot of bullet points.
So anyway, the letter says, please know that I came to my decision independently based on the law and available facts. I was never directly or indirectly pressured by any executive branch official, including those who work at the White House or GSA, with regard to the substance or timing of my decision.
Yeah, that's worse.
And I believe that. I think she's just a Trump loyalist. Go ahead.
I think that's worse. I would maybe not legally. Maybe, obviously, I'm sure that there's some legal reason for her saying that, but if it was actually that you just were so stupid that you're not sure who won the election until now, then that's worse. I would rather it be like, yeah, no, I'm just listening to Trump. Makes more sense to me personally.
I do want to add, but before we move on from this bullet point, that people have asked questions about the way this letter was written, right? Because the letter does not say, I, Emily Murphy, hereby ascertain pursuant to 3 U.S.C. Section 102, right, the Presidential Transition Act of 1963, that Joe Biden is president-elect. It does not say that sentence. It does not matter. The letter says, under the act, I authorize Joe Biden to access the presidential transition information and funds. And that means you've ascertained, right? So there's not going to be I don't know why she wrote it that way. I would have said, I ascertain that, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. is the president-elect of the United States.
Is his middle name Robinette?
His middle name is, in fact, Robinette. Anyway,
beautiful.
I would have said that. She didn't. Doesn't matter. Same legal effect. There's no weird like takesies, backsies, sovereign citizen, gold fringe, nothing. It's done and over, just like we told you it would be. Next thing that's done and over, just like we told you it would be, was states are continuing to certify their election results. I know Trump has said they don't have to, and Mark Levin has said, the legislatures are going to get it. It's not going to happen. Okay, so since our last episode, right, Virginia used a 2-day extension because, COVID and counting ballots and stuff. They certified on November 18th. Georgia certified on November 20th. Pennsylvania and Michigan on the 23rd. Nevada, Minnesota on the 24th. And by next Tuesday, right, Arizona is going to certify on the 30th. Wisconsin is going to certify on the 1st. We're past the point in these swing states that have, you know, Republican legislatures or Republican governors or both, for them to, you know, throw shenanigans that people are thinking about. It's not going to happen. The states are going to certify that Biden won their electoral votes because Biden won their electoral votes. That does not mean you can still have recounts, right? You can have recounts up until December 12th, right? Up until December 14th, actually, when the electors actually meet. But like, take Georgia, right? The margin in Georgia is 12,670 votes. There has never been a recount in American history that has overturned 12,670
votes. Well, and I want quickly, because I listen to The Daily. I know a lot of people do. Millions of Americans listen to The Daily. And they presented the Georgia recount as some sort of concession to Trump. And I just didn't, that didn't seem right to me. But am I wrong? Is that an accurate statement? I thought that it was kind of a routine audit check thingy they do. Was that a concession to Trump?
I would not interpret that as a concession to Trump. That is right under. And we talked about this from our show immediately following Election Day. The difference between Georgia and Wisconsin is that when you trigger the various provisions of the Georgia statutes, Georgia says that those recounts are paid for at taxpayer expense, and Wisconsin requires you to pay, you know, no money down. And so, yeah, it does not.
Free look, recount? Money down.
I want to be clear on this. I think Georgia's model is better than Wisconsin's model, right? Like, if you had a grassroots candidate with no money that lost by 74 votes, right? Like, yeah, absolutely. They should get a hand recount of everything that happened in that state in order to see if they actually won, right? And we shouldn't say, oh, well, you're going to have to put up a $7 million bond, which is what it was actually 8 million, 7 point something, to recount all of Wisconsin. It's why the Trump campaign didn't do that. Georgia has a more, what I would call a more progressive model that says, if you can meet the criteria, it's under a 0.5%, which it is, then you can request a recount. I don't have any problem with Trump availing himself of the legal mechanisms that are available to him. I will tell you, it will not matter. There's absolutely nothing. And here's the significance, okay? On November 26th, 2000, the state of Florida certified that its electoral votes went to George W. Bush, right? Everything that happened after that, and again, you can listen to episodes 1 through 4 of the podcast, was about Al Gore attempting to supplant that certification, right? Which you then have to prove by various standards ranging from a preponderance to clear and convincing evidence, right? To say, yeah, you said Bush won the state, but here's clear and convincing evidence that I actually won the state, right? That's how the recounts operate. So once we cross that threshold, once we go past December 1, next Tuesday, all of the swing states, right, will have certified their election results. And so presumptively, that will make Joe Biden legally the president-elect, the next president, right? Like, it's going to happen. And so does that mean that you have zero remedies if there were, in fact, you know, fraud or indeterminacy? No, like, but you have that baseline, right? That it's not just, oh, it's all up in the air and it depends on what, you know, Amy Coney Barrett says, right? Like, that's not where we are. We're at a place where states, Republican states, Democratic states, whatever, are certifying that Joe Biden won their electoral votes and is, in fact, president-elect of the United States. We shouldn't have to be doing this, but we are. And I know we got people on our side who were sort of freaking out, and we've been trying to talk you off the ledge, and maybe you believe us a little bit now.
Opening Arguments is brought to you by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Yeah, for me, that's mainly my own brain. And if you're anything like me, BetterHelp can assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. That's really important because, you know, sometimes you and your counselor just might not be a fit. You know, there's a lot of variables that go into that. It's nice to have the confidence that you can easily and for no charge change counselors if you feel you need to. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. There are many glowing reviews from folks just like you who have tried this and have found it to be of tremendous value in their lives. For example, here's one about a counselor named Sarah. Sarah always greets me with a warm smile and sunny disposition. She listens well, respects my time and priorities, and offers reasonable solutions to issues we're addressing on each session. So if you'd like to try it out, visit BetterHelp.com/OA. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. This special offer for Opening Arguments listeners is to get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/OA. One more time, 10% off, BetterHelp.com/OA. You always include us in that, you know, to try to give me some credit. I appreciate it. You know, I've been working. But no, I, you know, again, the peak of my worry was basically election night, maybe a little bit the next day. And as things have unfolded, you know, it's gotten better. You've helped me feel better. You know, I'm convinced as I represent the very worried, skeptical, things don't matter as much listener, I think. And, I feel pretty good that, in fact, I feel incredibly good that Trump is leaving. He's gone. I think, you know, you've convinced me results are final. They don't have any, you know, they don't exactly have top talent working on their legal cases. I mean, yeah, still feel really bad about a bunch of other things, but about this specific thing, feeling good. All right. Even more, still more you're right about. And by the way, I just want to, you know, side note, the point of these segments, I'm sure we've said this before, this isn't really about like, oh, individual A, Andrew Torres is right or wrong. The point is that a lot of the media that you may be watching, cable news, all that, there's no penalty for when people get stuff wrong. You know, like pundits can pundit, you know, they can just say whatever. Nobody really holds them accountable. We want to be accountable on this show. And like when we get something right or wrong, again, I'm using the royal we, when Andrew gets something right or wrong, you know, we want to tell you why he's predicting it and why. If it was wrong, how it went wrong, we're seeking to have a better understanding here. It's not just about some, you know, point system of what Andrew did or didn't say. So I just wanted to emphasize that because it's really about being able to form a better view, a more accurate picture of the world and how things are working, than it is, you know, about just, about Andrew being right or wrong, but it's also fun, you know, when our good friend Andrew Torres is right about something. So just wanted to emphasize that. What's the final thing?
So with all that as things that we told you not to worry about and feel good about, this is another thing that we were right about that I kind of wish we weren't. And that is a couple days ago, November 22nd, the United States formally withdrew from the Open Skies Treaty. If you know what the Open Skies Treaty is, that's because you're a show listener. In fact, we did our live show.
Yeah, I remember.
So that was OA 325 when we covered what was the main story for that live show, withdrawal from the Open Skies Treaty, which you should go back and look like it's Thanksgiving. Go listen to OA 325. But if you haven't, the takeaway is I'm not saying that only a Russian stooge would withdraw from the Open Skies Treaty, but I am saying that if we had a Russian stooge as president of the United States, this is exactly what that Russian stooge would do. Mm-hmm. The Open Skies Treaty is a benefit to the United States, and we are worse off in the international community, and the arguments to the contrary are ridiculous. And the fact that you have Republicans lining up to defend this is an illustration of how far Trump took over and corrupted the party. That this is a Republican plan put into place under a Republican president, that to the extent that their arguments are correct, right, that there is an attempt to evade by Russia, it would be to our interest to remain in the program rather than to opt out of the treaty. But no, May 22nd, the United States exercised its right pursuant to paragraph 2 of Article 15 of the Open Skies Treaty by providing notice to the various treaty signatories of its decision to withdraw. There was a 6-month grace period, and those 6 months ended November 22nd, and the United States, you know, filed the sternly worded crunch wrap that says we're definitely out. So we're definitely out, and that's bad, and it sucks, and it hurts our geostrategic position vis-a-vis Russia, which, you know, is pretty much what the Trump administration has tried to do.
Well, is there an undo on this, or what's going to happen? What do you think Biden will do with this?
Yes and no. Like, look, we can petition to rejoin, and the Biden administration is going to do a lot of that stuff. But we've talked about this, right? One of the arguments against the efficaciousness of the Open Skies Treaty is that, like, you know, it was written in the late 80s, early 90s, right? Like, the technology that they talk about in it is, like, you know, the big, like, camcorders you had to sling over your back, and they record it on a, you know, 5 1/4-inch floppy disk or whatever, right? Like, we have certain equipment that is dedicated to being OSI compliant, and the military can mothball that equipment in the next 2 months. And if they do, we're going to have to reauthorize, rebuild, you know, find somebody. Like, I think the Western Design Center still makes the 6502, but, like, you know, we're going to have to rebuild this, like, you know.
Wow, you and I. All right, let's get on it.
Yeah, you and me. That's it. We're doing it. So yeah, it is. We can re-enter, but it's this is the theme, and we're going to be talking about this for 4 years, at least the next 2 years, right? The theme is, think about that, like, bratty kid that comes by and knocks down your house of cards, right? Like, it's way harder to build something up than it is to destroy it. And this is a thing Trump has destroyed on his way out.
Down the law, breaking down the law, breaking down the law, breaking down the law. All right, Andrew, can we finally talk about locking Lindsey Graham up?
Thomas, you've been asking me this ever since Lindsey Graham did this, and I shared your outrage, and I thought today, on this day in which we give thanks, was a good day to dig into it. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham called up the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and in a conversation told him something. Exactly what he said is somewhat disputed, but Brad Raffensperger, lifelong Republican, somebody who voted for Trump, somebody who has said in writing, quote, "I was hoping Republicans would win," end of quote, right? So, wow. You know, yeah, not
a deep state Democrat. Well, no, probably will be labeled as a deep state secret Democrat, but not really.
Right. What Raffensperger says that Graham asked him to do was to say in counties in which there was a significant mismatch between the signature on the envelope on the outside of a ballot and the signature of a voter on file with the Secretary of State, to then say, if there's a county where there's a lot of these, that's presumptively fraud, and we want to throw out all of the ballots from all of those counties. Let me break down that sentence a little bit because it's crazy. So first, and again, and because there's a lot of disinformation being put out by Lindsey Graham and by Donald Trump.
You don't say. This.
Yeah. So first, you don't sign your ballot. I shouldn't have to say this, but Lindsey Graham has tweeted out, like, when there's a mismatch between your ballot and the envelope, like, that's voter fraud. Well, you don't sign your ballot. You know why you don't sign your ballot, Lindsey? Because we have a secret ballot system in the United States. So you don't sign your ballot.
It's just the envelope it comes in, right?
Yeah. You fold up your ballot, and in some states, you put it in an envelope, and then you sign the envelope. And then when they're when they are processing that ballot at the election center, there are various states, including Georgia, that then match up the signature on the back of the envelope with the signature that you have on file. And I want to tell you, I have done a ton of research on this. This is a tool that is used to disenfranchise minority voters. There is nothing inherent, right, about being black that says your signature is less likely to match. There are a couple of things that again, predominantly favor Democratic voters, where there's likely to be a mismatch, right? One of them is young voters. If you have any Uncle Franks in your timeline, like, you may see them having posted, like, cranky nonsense about, like, well, you know, the problem with that Common Core and, you know, is that they're no longer teaching our kids cursive, right?
Yeah.
And you've looked at it and been like, oh, Uncle Frank, you racist idiot. but it is true, right?
Yeah.
That our kids don't know cursive. So
I don't
means,
know cursive. Go on.
Really? Okay. Well,
I mean, I could probably remember some of it. I don't write. What I type. I don't write anything. If I write for more than like a couple sentences, my hand cramps up. I can't even do it. Look, I'm a millennial. Writing is a dying. I also don't know how to set the type in a printing press or use calligraphy. If people do know that still, that's cool. Good for you. I don't really think it's that important anymore.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? Like, again, I've mentioned this on the show. Like, my son's 18 years old. My son's quote signature, like, look, anything my son writes as opposed to types looks like, you know, a 5-year-old has done this on a plane that's taking a nosedive.
It's time to admit some things, Andrew. When we did the aforementioned live shows, we wanted to do a thing for our, I think, I can't remember, our top level ticket holders or something, where we gave them a really cool printed card of the Optimus Prime and Negatron thing. And I thought it would be cool if we signed those, you know? And so, do you know what I had to do to do that, accomplish that? I had to take an entire evening and practice being able to write a legible signature of any kind. Not even joking. I had to work on it. I have actually, I had a whole like notepad that I was like, okay, I need to get this to look like not a 4-year-old wrote it.
And you're like 33, right? 33?
I am 34 now.
34. Yeah. Okay. God,
and I'm, right. I was just trying to remember. I when I say not a 4-year-old, I'm not shooting for, you know, an adult. I'm just trying to get to like a 9-year-old. Like that was the level of signature. I was just hoping to get more into maybe into the teens. Like if I was lucky, I have no signature.
So here's what that means, right? If you are 34 years of age and under, right? And by the way, if you're 34 years of age and under, you're a Joe Biden voter.
Wow, how'd you know?
No two signatures that you make are likely to look the same.
Oh my God, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't be able to vote if I were black. Oh my God, if I lived in a place that's been targeted with these stupid laws.
Yep. So as it turns out, an expert witness has evaluated this, and I will include the link in the show notes. This was challenging an Ohio signature matching law, but the research is the same. The highest level of false positives, right? That is where one person signs their name twice, but the vote matching system says, nope, that's two different people, right? The three categories that get thrown out are the youngest voters,
yep,
the oldest voters, and voters with disabilities.
Oh, right. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Can imagine all of that. Here's the ratio. So if I had to say this, what percent of signatures do you think that the vote matching software tosses out, right? Says, oh, mm-hmm. no, this is fraud. This is, you know, two different people that okay. turn out to be authentic signatures, right? So,
oh, that
so,
turn right, out so, to be actually right.
Yeah, right. So 0%, the software works perfectly. 100%,
they're all false.
Okay. Yeah, like, come on.
So we're already a percent of a percent. So we're the percent of the ones that it's already rejecting, which percent of those are actually correct signatures? Right. Like
are false positives, yes.
How often would there even be a problem with, you know, like, I wonder what the actual rate of a problem there even is. So there can't be that many that it could even correctly identify, because how often is this even a problem? It's got to be negligible. Am I wrong? So I'm going to say 70%.
97%.
Wow.
97% of rejected signatures are, in fact,
yeah,
authentic.
Because when you think about it, I think I stumbled onto it. How big of a problem would this even be?
It's
always going to be false positives or whatever.
At all.
Yeah.
So that ratio is, if the software kicks out a ballot as being the signature does not match the signature on file, it is 32 times more likely to be a valid ballot than it is to be an invalid ballot.
Get rid of this stupid software. Get rid of these rules. It's a joke.
So what that means is, right, in areas where you have extra scrutiny, and we all know what that means, it's incredibly likely to throw out ballots on the basis of a signature mismatch where you know everybody knows that these are valid ballots. And now, let's put all that back together again. What Lindsey Graham tried to do was not just throw out ballots, was not to say, oh, you should throw out signature mismatch, was to say, and again, allegedly, but this is what a Republican alleges mm-hmm. that he was told to do, to throw out all of the ballots, including valid ones, in counties that had a high level of mismatch. And again, counties with a high level of mismatch means Democratic counties.
Wow. So even if you took this idiotic, stupid, corrupt thing to be true, even if you took it, oh, there are some mismatches that are legit, let's just say, for the sake of argument, he goes further to say that everybody in that county should therefore lose the right to vote?
Correct.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
These
so,
people.
Fortunately, not only is this a crime, there are three separate ways that we can hold Lindsey Graham accountable. And I want us to pursue all three of these approaches.
Ooh, let's do it.
And I think we can. So first, this violates federal election law. What federal election law does it violate? Here's how I had to put this together. And you might ask, has anybody ever been prosecuted for this? Not to my knowledge, right?
So not a good sign, but
whatever. As not to my knowledge, as a sitting senator said, hey, Secretary of State, you should throw out valid votes.
Yeah.
So
true.
First, I looked for, is throwing out valid votes a crime? Right? And you know, you might say, these are state elections. Is it a federal crime? Was my first question, right? And it turns out, it is a federal crime.
Well, why was that? Wouldn't you want it to be a state crime so Trump can't just pardon him or something?
Well, yeah, you start the investigation now, but you bring the charges on January 23rd, right? So 52 U.S.C. section 10307 subsection A makes it a crime for any election official to willfully refuse to tabulate and report the vote of any person, right? So if Raffensperger had listened to Lindsey Graham and refused to tabulate those votes, that would have been a crime. And so then I asked myself, okay, is it a crime to ask somebody to do that?
Yeah.
And fortunately, if you flip to the very next section, 52 USC 10308, whosoever attempts to deprive any person of any right secured by that thing that you just read, 10307A, is guilty of a felony.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a felony. You can't call up an election official and say, I don't want you to take into account valid votes. All right. So it's a violation of federal law. You mentioned the Trump pardon thing. This is also a violation of Georgia state law.
Wow.
Why? A bunch of different things, but it is a violation of Section 21-2-604, criminal solicitation. And it says a person commits the offense of criminal solicitation to commit election fraud in the first degree when, with intent that another person engage in conduct constituting a felony under this article, he or she solicits, requests, commands, importunes, or otherwise attempts to cause the other person to engage in such conduct, right? And is that conduct that he was trying to do a felony? You bet your booty it is, right? 21-2-562, any person who willfully alters materially or intentionally destroys any entry which has been lawfully made, or inserts or permits to be inserted any fictitious name, false figure, false statement, or fraudulent entry in any registration card, electors list, voter certificate, affidavit, tally paper, general or duplicate return sheet, statement, certificate, oath, voucher, account, ballot, or other record or document authorized to be made, used, signed, returned, or preserved for any public purpose in connection with any primary or election, shall be guilty of a felony. And upon conviction thereof, shall be sentenced to imprisonment for not less than one mandatory minimum,
ooh,
nor more than 10 years, nor to pay a fine not to exceed $100,000 or both. So Lindsey Graham has violated, arguably, again, you have to figure out, you have to call Raffersperger to testify in front of the jury.
Yeah, what if it's just a he said, she said?
It would be up to the jury, right? The jury would say, do we have reasonable doubt about this, right? And people get convicted in those situations all the time, right? They say, I 100% do not believe Lindsey Graham. And a couple of things have happened in light of the public discovery, thanks to Secretary Raffersperger. Lindsey Graham first said, oh yeah, well, I called a bunch of different secretaries of state because I'm just concerned about election results. I called Arizona. And then the Arizona Secretary of State said, Lindsey Graham never called me. Never minding, right, that, you know, he only called red states. By his own definition, he only called red states that went for Biden.
Mm-hmm.
But the Arizona Secretary of State said Lindsey Graham never called me. So we will be able in a criminal case, right? You would be able to subpoena that either the state or federal prosecutor or both. It would be delightful. Let's have him on simultaneous prosecutions.
Yeah.
That does not violate double jeopardy. Listen to our Law and Awful Movies Double Jeopardy to find out why. Would be able to subpoena his phone records. And what we do know, what Lindsey Graham has said anyway, was that he made two calls to Secretary Raffersperger and that there was a call in between. Do we know that that was to Donald Trump or to a Donald Trump operative? We don't know that. But we sure would if Lindsey Graham were indicted for either federal election fraud or Georgia state election fraud. There's a third thing that we can do. And I really, really cannot emphasize this strongly enough. And that is the U.S. Senate can open an ethics investigation into Lindsey Graham's behavior.
But only if you watch our live stream and donate the most to us and we retake the Senate, right?
Yeah. That is 100% correct. That it absolutely needs to be an item on the agenda. It will not happen if the Democrats do not control the Senate. It might happen if they do. It might not happen if they do. But there's no chance if Republicans hold on, they will shield this guy. And when the Senate begins an ethics investigation, I don't want to get your hopes up, but I want to tell you, the Senate has the power to expel a sitting member for violations of the law. For, quote, this
what
is
what kind
Article
of margins
one.
Do you need? Oh, sorry.
I'm going to tell you. No. Article 1, Section 5, Clause 2, right? Each House of Congress may determine the rules of its proceedings. We've talked about that. Punish its members for disorderly behavior and, with the concurrence of 2/3, expel a member. Now, is it likely that any Senate would expel Lindsey Graham? No, that's not likely. In fact, no sitting senator has been expelled from the Senate under this provision since the Civil War in 1862. Various sitting senators were kicked out of the Senate because, you know, you represent a state that has declared war against the Union. But the threat of expulsion has led multiple senators to resign rather than go to the mat on that, right? Wow. This is the Nixon plan. So I don't think the Senate is likely to expel Lindsey Graham. But I want to tell you, 1995, right? We're not the Civil War, right? Bob Packwood, Republican senator from Oregon, credibly accused of multiple instances of sexual harassment, was brought up on formal disciplinary charges before the Senate for sexual misconduct and for abuse of power. And he resigned his seat rather than put the Senate to a vote. So I don't know what could happen, right? All I know is we absolutely have the power, if we control the Senate, to say, this is conduct unbecoming a senator. Right?
Wow.
And attempting to influence an election 100, right? Like, so I talked about Bob Packwood, but, you know, 1982, Senator Williams, Harrison Williams, Democrat from New Jersey. So, you know, we'll be bipartisan here, was brought up on ethics charges for corruption. And again, same thing. He resigned rather than put the Senate to a vote. So, Senator Williams, by the way, that was in connection with the Abscam scandal, which is one of my favorite stings of all time. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm a Teapot Dome man myself.
Teapot Dome? Quality?
I just Abscam. Like the name. I have no memories. It wasn't oil rights or something, I think, that they sold. Yeah,
anyway. Warren G. Harding. So
yeah.
it was the kind of thing that, like, Donald Trump did 3 times a day.
Yeah, and it was fine, just covered. Yeah.
And it brought
tweet,
down
didn't matter.
The
yeah.
entire Harding administration. Yeah.
Yep.
So, we have the ability to do something, and
let's do it, folks.
We can and we should.
We have to win the Senate. It's so important. I know we don't get everything we want. We don't get, you know, single payer healthcare probably, but there's so many things we do get if we win the Senate. Please put all your energy into Georgia this next month. How long do we have? Gosh, it's kind of.
Yeah, we have until January the 3rd. So,
oh, gosh. Let's focus in, folks. It's very important. We could get rid of Lindsey Graham, maybe. We could.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we have no chance of doing it if we don't win.
Yeah, we could put people to the vote. And, like, you know, you might be saying, oh, well, you know, Republicans have gotten away. Yeah, Trump has gotten away with it. But, like, the number of Republicans who are loyal to Lindsey Graham is way, way lower than the number of Republicans who are loyal to Donald Trump. So, you know, let's... You can't, you know, you can't win if you don't try. So.
Exactly. All right. Here's the thing. We were going to do a bar exam question, but it turns out Andrew's a deadbeat who doesn't pay his bills. So, you know, no, it's been so long. The license lapsed, huh?
Yeah. I'm going to have to get you a new license. I will give you, so since we can't do a bar exam question, I will give you 60 seconds on recent ruling from the
Okay, sure.
E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit. This minute order entered November 20th. Judge Kaplan, no relation to Roberta Kaplan, E. Jean Carroll's lawyer. We have talked about the fact that the court decided, Southern District of New York, U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York, rejected Donald Trump's efforts to have the U.S. Department of Justice intervene on his behalf. The court, quote, they issued a minute order, quote, clarifying the docket. And this is delightful. It says, this action was commenced against Donald J. Trump in his individual, not his official capacity in New York State Court. By substitution for the original private counsel for Mr. Trump, Mark Kasowitz, Christine Montenegro, Paul Burgo appeared on defendant's behalf. On September 8th, 2020, the United States of America, represented by Stephen Terrell and other attorneys at the Department of Justice, removed this action to this court, that is Southern District of New York, and later moved to substitute the U.S. as defendant in place of Mr. Trump. On October 27th, 2020, this court denied that motion, which we've covered on the show. Accordingly, by virtue of their appearance on behalf of Mr. Trump in the state court, Mr. Kasowitz and Burgo and Ms. Montenegro represent Mr. Trump in this removed action unless and until relieved by this court. Nevertheless, the docket sheet erroneously lists Mr. Terrell and other DOJ attorneys as counsel for defendant Trump. And I love it when a judge says this. That is incorrect. They represent only the United States. The clerk shall correct the docket to reflect that Mr. Terrell and his colleagues at the DOJ represent only the United States of America, and that Mr. Kasowitz and Burgo and Ms. Montenegro represent Mr. Trump. The clerk shall mail copies of this order to Attorney Mark Kasowitz, Christine Montenegro, et cetera. So here's what that means. This is a continuing attempt, in addition to improperly attempting to assert executive privilege. This is Donald Trump trying to pass his legal costs onto the Department of Justice, which is to say onto you and I as the taxpayer.
Wow.
And Judge Kaplan was like, yeah, get out of here with that. You got to pay Mark Kasowitz. Sorry, he's your lawyer. He represented you in state court. You do not get to foist this off on DOJ, no matter how much Bill Barr is a corrupt dinosaur puppet that wants to intervene on your behalf.
Wow. Well, I guess I aced this Barr question.
You sure did. I feel like America aced this Barr question.
And thank you!
It's time to thank our new patrons at patreon.com/law. Enjoying all the goodies. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And it's Thanksgiving, so double thanks. Andrew, why don't you start us off?
Thank you to Thomas M. Joyce, to Italic Squirrels. I like that. They're all at a 30-degree angle. To Rudy and Associates, when you want to pay a filing fee for your tweets. Brian Cramp, to the letter C. All right, so C is for cookie. That's good enough
maybe
for me.
Maybe that's Phoebe. Yeah, maybe she's finally supporting me.
Oh, God. We did not get a chance to talk about criminal defense representation for Phoebe. I will represent her pro bono. So to Dan Cowell, Theodore Johnson, Brad, Mousy Tongue, Raunak Sethi, Andrew Katzenberger, Dustin Hutchinson, Frank Diaz, and Ruben De Jesus. Thomas, take it away.
Thank you to Joshua Little, Flop, Jonathan Benesh, Chris, Carly Brock, Sean McGovern, Matthew Nelson, T.P.R. Jones, Lindsay Swanson, Solange Deschatre. I'm probably doing a half French pronunciation there. My apologies. Ginger G, Double L, and Ada McIntosh or Macintosh. Not sure which. Okay, thank you so much, new patrons. I hope you're enjoying all the goodies. And more coming your way pretty soon.
And almost every week we've been doing Miss Ashley's stories in the news that didn't quite make it onto the show. I got another 7 pages. They will have been live for patrons by the time the show goes out. So if you love show notes and rabbit holes, you will love Miss Ashley's stories that didn't make it on the show that we give away to all of our patrons. So
I love show notes and rabbit holes.
Who does not? Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll see you. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, a socially distanced away from anyone who was not in your pod and all that. And we'll see you on Tuesday.
He's not even a lawyer and he's kicking your ass.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media LLC. All rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.